Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and waiting the 18 that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade take the mic.
Hello, it's John Pollock and Wei Ting. Welcome to Rewind to Raw for Monday night, March the 25th. As Michael Cole reminded us, the penultimate Raw before WrestleMania.
Which means it's the second last one.
Which means it's, I wish they called it that. It's the second last Raw. Fourth final television.
However, penultimate sounds a bit fancier, which makes this the penultimate Rewind to Raw before WrestleMania.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. And Wednesday will be the penultimate Rewind to Dynamite. And then so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. How was your weekend?
I had a great weekend.
That's great.
Yeah. You put me on the spot, honestly, anytime
sorry.
I'm in these moments. Cause like, I'm so focused on like talking about the show that I've kind of blocked everything else out in my head. But I remember feeling very good about the weekend. How about you?
Okay. I'm not clawing for details. All I want to know is that you're in a good headspace. I had a good weekend as well. It was more of a low key weekend, but, very productive day on Monday. I got a lot of stuff done that I wanted to get done.
That's awesome. Wonderful.
Even managed on Sunday night. I felt I wasn't getting the full X-Men experience. I was like 15 minutes into the first episode. So I started from the beginning. I was like, let's give this my undivided attention. Got to say, episode one, quite enjoyed it. Nice cliffhanger at the end of episode one. Have not watched episode two yet, but plan to.
I'm curious to know like how you feel, because I think so much of my enjoyment is from my knowledge of the X-Men and my attachment to the X-Men as a child, especially for this a show like this that's so steeped in nostalgia. But
see, I have zero.
Yeah, which I find fascinating. So the fact that you found enjoyment in it, I think you'll like episode two even more.
Okay, well, I will continue to watch and will not be updating people on my thoughts because we have a separate show for that. It is called MCU Later with WH Park and Rich Fan. So you can go check out their free introductory episode covering those episodes. Some Dune chat in there as well. And WH just, you know, going off on whatever comes to mind.
As always. Yeah. Maybe you'll be a future guest.
We will see about that. But yeah, check that out later on this week. It will be up on the site. You know what I also began today, Wei? Mont, my new book.
Ronda Rousey, Our Fight.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I feel like I've already read this book. I've seen
I think everyone's getting a sample of this. Let me tell you, like, you can just pretty much pick this up. The wrestling stuff seems like it is pretty did not seem to be a filter in place for her thoughts on the WWE. And she is now doing the media rounds promoting this book. And she did an interview with cage side seats. And a few of the comments that she had was that she says that in regards to Vince McMahon, she kind of doubled down on what she had tweeted out, the fact that Vince McMahon was always there by text message. And when it was spoken about with the main event of WrestleMania back in 2019 with Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch, she said that I felt like WrestleMania 35 didn't live up to my own expectations for it. And I wanted to come back and do a singles match with Becky and really put in the time and development that he needed, and said that WWE just refused to work with me at all. They refused to collaborate. They didn't want to talk to me about it. They kept pushing it off and pushing it off until it finally got on the road to WrestleMania. And they're like, yeah, we're not going to do you and Becky. I'm like, all right, well, then I'm fucking leaving unless me and Shayna can tag. If you guys don't want to work with me, you don't want to do something extraordinary, you just want to do good enough every single night, I came here to have fun with my friends. And said that they, in regards to the Charlotte match with Rhea Ripley, I mean, she spoke about that and the line that is going around here about Charlotte pretty much just stating that this is what we're doing and how long that they were going to be going. And at the end, she said that Ronda had a sit down with Triple H and said, I can't be associated with mediocrity. And that's what they seemed to be happy with at the time. And I hope that's different now, but I can't say. And she says, I'm so glad that it's getting turned around. Triple H has been great towards the women in the company and really believing in us. He's the whole reason that I was there, because he believed in me. I really wish that my last run was under Triple H running things and Vince being gone. So, I mean, the clear people that she had the most angst towards were number one, Vince McMahon, and coming up in second and third, John Laurinaitis and Bruce Pritchard, who seemed to be the focus of I will be curious to read the entire book. I'm still on the MMA stuff. And honestly, I think it's the first time she has gone in any depth into the Holly Holm loss. And I find the MMA stuff to be really interesting, and just how she dealt with that loss and how this was a woman who seemed to have designed this entire career around herself in MMA of being undefeated. And it was this protection that was made out of glass. And when she lost, it shattered. And she had essentially, she basically stated in the aftermath of that fight, she did not have the desire to live beyond having her boyfriend at the time, now husband, Travis Brown. So I think the MMA stuff is really interesting. So I'm not even at the wrestling yet, but you would certainly take these excerpts as someone that I don't think hated her time in WWE, but I think it was greatly underwhelming because of the system that she found herself in. But remember, you see, and I'm sure she had her positives too, but it's certainly going to be a very interesting book. They did plug Becky's book tonight. Didn't happen to mention Rhonda's also coming out next week.
No, they did not make a segment for her. I think, wrestlers talking about their careers is always fascinating, but it's, I think this is a special case where somebody is so closely removed from their days in the WWE, and is especially at such a top level, that this is especially interesting to hear somebody like Ronda be potentially so unfiltered about people that are still currently working in that company right now. Now, I'm also very curious to know how much of this book was already written before Vince McMahon's departure from the company, whether or not.
Which one?
Yeah, great question. Yeah.
Well, but I would imagine all of this was done before this most recent one, because that was just January. But I think at the very least was, the Wall Street reporting, the Wall Street Journal reporting was out. And while we didn't know the graphic details of the Janelle Grant suit, certainly didn't paint a favorable picture of Vince McMahon. It's just a worse one now.
Sure. But even with Vince McMahon no longer a part of the company, how Ronda has always kind of been known as somebody who didn't have much of a filter attached to her. Now, that might be called into question during her time in the company. Like we kind of talked about maybe last week, there are maybe some inconsistencies with certain answers that she's provided while working as a member of the company versus her, what she's saying right now. And I guess I've yet to see maybe any of the interviews really challenge her on that yet. So I'm I'm curious to see if you know, she's doing a lot of press, whether or not that stuff gets brought up, whether or not the book addresses, you know, her thoughts on why she considered performing at Saudi Arabia. You know, but it may be just more of a peek into the behind the curtains of like what it's like being a woman working within that environment. I mean, it's not like we have a lot of text, you know, giving such recent information from somebody who was there.
Yeah. And it will remain to be seen how Ronda's time in pro wrestling is viewed in hindsight by the audience. Like, here was somebody that I think is now we're at a point where she is maybe not underrated, but I would say underappreciated for her contributions to MMA, that I think she left on such a sour note for so much of the fan base that already in MMA, there is such a turnover when it comes to the big peak stars, because it is a smaller time that you have as, you know, at the top of a division, there's such turnover. And with Ronda, we're talking a lifetime ago when her last fight was 2016. And it's almost like Ronda is, you know, I think it just left on such a note as this malcontent to so many people, and the way she avoided the media for the fight with Amanda Nunes. I think she had bitter feelings at MMA, and I think MMA fans had bitter feelings at her. And in this instance, I mean, here is somebody that obviously had her issues at WWE, but I think the targets in which she is going after, I think that will resonate with a lot of the fan base. This is not her that is scorching WWE and in fact is going out of her way to praise Triple H. So it's just interesting to see how we will look back at Ronda's two runs. I think the first one in particular was the key one, the second one less so, that she was a difference maker.
I feel like you're talking about MMA. You're talking,
well, I'm talking now about like wrestling fans, how look at Ronda's contributions going back to 2018, and if they will look at Ronda as somebody that is valued for their time in WWE, or someone that was looked at as lesser than that. I mean, right, she was a massive reason for the fact that the women got to a certain, that the WWE got serious about the women. I think you have to look at her as the key contributor.
So I feel like much of that answer to that question will be determined by how the WWE curates that history, how much they want to remind the audience of Ronda Rousey's contributions. They could do a self-destruction of Ronda Rousey if they wanted to, or they could do a glowing praise of like what Ronda Rousey managed to offer the women's evolution. It's kind of up to them. I mean, she's certainly somebody that I could see them offering a Hall of Fame induction to. Now, that's provided.
I think that will happen. Like, let's not forget this is like, she is ingrained with the UFC and with that management, and I feel that they will want as strong of a relationship. But it is, you know, at the moment, yes, you do have Bruce Pritchard that is still in the system. Like, going after Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis, I don't think that's going to upset TKO and WWE.
TKO seems like they, like, at least Ari and Mark Shapiro probably want to say these words themselves at this point. Distancing from those names is exactly what they're looking for. Praising somebody who's currently there in a Paul Levesque, I think, is exactly what they're looking for. So the question of whether or not she's really burning any bridges with the WWE or UFC with statements like this, I don't really think so. Now, what might call that into question is all the stuff that's come out about her discussing her concussion history and how.
Which is frightening. Like, that part I am into. And this is, she remembers having her first concussion at the, like, as a child, like swimming and crashing her head into the wall. And what was alarming was not just the volume. She said her concussions are in the dozens. And what concerned her was how minimal impact would cause them. Like, the Sarah McMahon fight, I don't know if you remember, like, this was a pretty quick fight in 2014. And she felt like her bell was rung in that. And she has a pretty vivid description of when she would get these concussions. And again, she said that she counts them in the dozens. And this predated MMA. So think about the sparring that she was doing, and save for fights. And then you're going into professional wrestling.
It's wild. Now, for me, the part where like somebody like a UFC or a WWE might be nervous about what she says in the book like this is how that history of concussions managed to escape all their pre-testing protocols. I mean, is it as simple as somebody not mentioning it? And does that call into question how good these, you know, testing protocols is. In this interview with Cage Side Seats, yes, she mentions they were scanning my, this is about her jump to the WWE and her being concerned that the WWE would find something. She says, quote, they were scanning my brain and I was like, please don't find that. I'm just falling apart on the inside of my skull. But they said everything looked great. I was cleared to wrestle, but I just wouldn't be able to talk about my concussion history. So,
yeah, I mean, it doesn't make the testing procedure for, like, if she is being honest about the volume of concussions that she has had and that she was this concerned about going through the screening, number one, it does give you insight into the performer's mindset that they are not going to disclose. And I mean, we're going back a significant amount of time, but the lesson learned of Brian Danielson and Nigel McGuinness, one was honest and one was not honest. One got a job and the other got his contract rescinded. And I mean, what kind of a lesson does that tell you in this whole thing? It also makes you certainly wonder that if Ronda ever did have the itch to do another match, I mean, she's almost in a position now where could WWE green light her if she wanted to do Mania next year or in 2 years from now. I mean, we're not talking about a woman who is at an age where doing another wrestling match is out of the question.
But it does feel like she's really shut, like, at least from what I've seen from these interviews, it really sounds like she shut the door on it. But you're right, people obviously in 10, 5 years time could change. Yeah,
it's a great point. And like when she was done with judo, she was done with judo. When she was done with MMA, she was done with MMA. And you would think this book and where the way she comes off, perhaps like that door is now shut on professional wrestling. She certainly doesn't need to do it.
She does, at least I've seen somewhere, maybe suggest the idea of like hypothetically doing an independent wrestling run, just maybe for the fun of it.
Well, so. I'm sure they will have the most advanced neurosurgeons at their disposal to make sure that there is absolutely no harm that could possibly happen on at the independent level. So That's good to know. But yeah, I will finish this book and I'm sure I will have more thoughts on it to come. The Motor City Machine Guns. It was first reported by PWInsider.com. Their deals are up April the 1st, and they appear to have wrapped up with the Philadelphia tapings that went down this past weekend. I guess you have to say, as free agents, like, it doesn't completely eliminate the chance of some deal coming to pass to go back to TNA, but it would seem that they're on the open market, and I would think that this is an opportunity for... I wouldn't even throw out WWE as not being interested, but you have to certainly be looking at the big two here. And I think that there is, you know, these two greatly have increased their standing, not just from a legacy standpoint, but you're talking about Shelley coming off this, I thought, really great singles run, and Sabin to boot in TNA over this past year. So it's not a case of these two are just simply resting on like 20 years of laurels either. Like, they're performing at very high levels. And to me, if I was AEW, I would want to work these guys into my tag title tournament or have something. I know the brackets are already released, but there's certainly, I think, going to be interest in these two.
Well, there are plenty of tag title tournaments going around these days.
That's
in
true.
Wrestling, John.
Yes.
You know, I totally agree. At least, you know, from what even I've seen as more of like a sort of, I don't know, onlooker for Impact Wrestling. I mean, it feels like these two have really garnered a whole lot of buzz just for two comebacks that I really was not expecting for, you know, the mid 2020s between these two, but both of them like coming in with, I think, a lot of a veteran sort of like skill that they've managed to display for companies that can really use that right now, I think, in either locker room. And both are still working at a very high level that is more than able to match up with, I think, even the highest that you've seen among the younger rosters. So I'm sure there'd be plenty of interest in either major American promotion, but let's not forget Japan, really any place that could probably use this tag team.
Yeah, I mean, I think for their like legacies, just to get that big, you know, they both had big national television presence on Spike TV, but I mean, we're talking 10 years ago at that point. I think for these guys, you know, they've had cups of coffee in various companies and stuff like that, and you know, for Shelley, a big run in New Japan. But I would think, you know, whether it is one or the other major companies, I mean, it would be similar to like the Briscoes getting that national television run that never came, unfortunately. Wheeler Yuta is off of the CMLL card this weekend. They announced that he is not cleared to compete. So Matt Seidel is taking his spot, teaming with Claudio Moxley and Brian Danielson at Arena Mexico this weekend with Ultimo Guerrero, Mystico, Blue Panther, and Volador Jr., which will also, in the house, will be post-wrestling correspondent Mike Murray, and the Queen of the C-Block as well, that will be there at Arena Mexico.
Excellent.
And wow. Sold out as well.
I can't believe he gets to go to that. That sounds amazing.
Yes. The British Bulldog, I spoke about this a little on the audio update, but they did run his episode on the A&E biography. So this was the documentary that was originally going to be part of that Icon series. I think this thing was shot in 2021. So they've been sitting on this thing forever. And so they have been running 2-hour A&E biographies. Last week, it was a 1-hour version on DDP. And this one as well ended up being an hour. The Roman Reigns one next week is 2 hours. But this one, I did get to watch this mainly because it was 1 hour. And that translates to about 45 minutes of runtime. It was just way too quick to try and summarize this guy's life and career in 45 minutes. The highlight, if you want to call it that, of just speeding through things was his firing from WWF in 1992 after Wembley Stadium, and then his return in 94. His WCW run in between there is condensed to about 20 seconds, where they show him walking down the aisle in WCW, and then we cut to SummerSlam 94. That was 2 years right there. And then he comes back in 94. Boom, it's the Hart Foundation angle of 97. I had whiplash of how fast they were moving through. And then, I mean, the back half of this, it's all on the prescription painkiller abuse, the staph infection he gets after landing on the trap door at Fall Brawl 98, and just a series of unfortunate events from Owen Hart's death to, he's hospitalized due to his back injury. It's the guy's a mess. And then coming back to the WWF for his blue denim jeans run in 1999, 2000, that does not turn out very well, and then dies at the age of 39 in 2002. So, I mean, it was one where I don't know if this was originally 2 hours. I could not imagine being the editor that has a finished 2-hour documentary and being told, cut it in half. I mean, there was too much to try and get into here. Brett had to summarize the Montreal Screwjob. I think he did it in 40 seconds, and I was amazed at how Brett, however they edited around him, it might have been an 18-minute story condensed to 40 seconds, but I was like, yeah, this is just wild. Because, I mean, for Bulldog and leaving the company, you do kind of have to talk about Montreal for that exit in 97. And, man, some of the footage they have of him in WCW, and they had home video footage of Davey where when he would get all pilled up, Diana would shoot him on a video camera so that he could see how messed up he was. And they're showing this. And it was, it was a very grim look at Davey Boy Smith. I can imagine, you know, there was the highs of Wembley Stadium, but there were all the problems this guy that was just, his body was a mess, and was medicating himself, and it was just a terrible fall, and not even making it to the age of 40. So I mean, it was very sad in that sense, but one where you do wish they had a bit more time, because there's a lot more that you could go into on Davey Boy Smith.
Any names that might have surprised you that appeared in interviews?
Again, I'm sure all of these were recorded years ago. Like, Brett is featured prominently, both of his Harry and Georgia, his children. Diana is featured on this a lot. And then, I mean, it's, they have Nigel briefly interviewed because he was at SummerSlam 92. And you have like Wade Barrett and Drew McIntyre talking about how popular Davey Boy Smith was to them as children growing up, and what a major star he was in the European market. But those were the keys. A lot on the family. His sister was also interviewed on this very briefly. Like, it felt like I was watching something that was just drastically cut down. That was the feeling I had watching him. And as well, the AEW Collision that we have talked about going against WrestleMania Night 1 will not be going against WrestleMania night one. It has been bumped to 11:30 p.m. that night due to NCAA men's basketball. So Collision will be going head to head with the press conference. I am hoping that WrestleMania is still not going on with a 7 p.m. start time at 11:30. But yes, this is a taped show from several days earlier.
There's a very good chance it'll still be going on.
Yeah, if so, then it's going to be a really late night for us. That could be very, very, very late. But there you go. The Collision that is kind of, if a tree falls in the forest, but no one's there, that's this episode of Collision. That's what it feels like. Unless they just throw something wild on this episode taped in Worcester.
I mean, I feel like that's kind of been Tony Khan's game plan, you know, throw something that might appeal to the type of hardcore fan that would seek something like this out. Maybe. If not live, then on DVR. I certainly think for the reputation of Collision, you never want to, you know, throw the towel in on any night. So I don't think it's the worst time slot in the world for a weekend like that. People are done watching five hours of
professional
wrestling.
Where's the wrestling this weekend?
You know, you're on a wrestling high. You might just want to put on a Collision at that point. So it probably stands to do as good of a rating as maybe what would have been what they would have done going up against them directly.
Well, what SmackDown was up against was the NCAA tournament, which seems to be impacting wrestling, both AEW and WWE. On Friday night, they did 2,235,000 viewers and a 0.61 in the demo. So they dropped 10% in the demo, 4% drop in audience. So these were the lowest numbers of the year. However, they still beat everything except for basketball on Friday night. And they were going against like some big games here, like James Madison and Wisconsin did 5.2 million viewers. Vermont and Duke did 4.5 million viewers. So this was not insignificant competition. In Canada, they were up this week doing 271,000 viewers, and they were third among sports for the night, but number one in the demo, topping curling.
Wow.
So more viewers for curling, but younger viewers for SmackDown. So that was the key right there.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Wade, do you have any expectations on what we're going to see on the Dark Side of the Ring on Brutus Beefcake tomorrow night?
So I'm not really familiar with like the sort of controversy of his story in his life.
They're going to focus a lot on the parasailing incident.
I mean, obviously that's not good, but is that the extent of the dark side of Brutus?
I imagine this one's going to be just nuts in terms of just it's Brutus Beefcake. It's probably just going to be a lot of wild stories and tales. But I remember when WWE did a feature on the parasailing incident and they had images of his face afterwards. It was one of the most grotesque things I've seen. And if they have this footage, I mean, it's remarkable that the man lived. Because I think some people are confused that he was the one parasailing. He was in the water, and it was a woman who was parasailing and coming at the rate of speed and double knees in like right smash into his face. It's remarkable the man lived afterwards, but like they literally had to put his face back together. So that will be on Tuesday night on Dark Side of the Ring. And the final notes here for Tuesday night as your lead in for Dark Side of the Ring, it is NXT with Bron Breakker and Baron Corbin against Otis and Akira Tozawa. If Otis and Tozawa win, they are added to the tag title match at Stand and Deliver. Ilya Dragunov and Stax Lorenzo in a non-title match. Josh Briggs versus Duke Hudson and Sean Spears against Dijak. Thea Hale against Jasmine Nix, and Ridge Holland will speak. And then Wednesday in Quebec City for Dynamite, there at over 4,000 tickets out for Swerve and Konosuke Takeshita, Will Ospreay against Shibata, and Young Bucks against Private Party in the tag title tournament. So that is what is coming up the next couple of nights as well. But Wei, what is coming up this week from Post Wrestling?
Well, tomorrow I will be live with Jordan Goodman and Neil Flanagan for The Wellness Policy. We're coming back at a special time of 12 p.m. Eastern because we'll be talking about the lovely art of video games, John.
Ooh.
Yes. I'm going to say right now, I don't think any of us are experts at video games, but we will be bringing somebody who is on. We
are a video game expert.
A video game expert. We're going to be bringing on Nick Shiner, who is a former school administrator who advocates for video games and esports as a positive tool for teaching, learning, creating, collaborating, and competing. So somebody who certainly knows a lot more than the three of us, and somebody who can really speak to it. You know, maybe there's a reputation out there for that video games aren't necessarily healthy hobbies, but Nick begs to differ. How could it be educational for all of us? And, you know, as a parent, I'm kind of curious to know what he has to say.
I'll tell you, I have if my concern level of like my kids adopting social media at a young age, that's like 100 on my concern scale. Video games, like I watch the games they play and the problem solving they have to do. It's like I don't have too much issue with video games. I guess everything in moderation, but I don't know. It was I think a generation ago, video games were the big concern. I think we have bigger concerns than video games.
That'll certainly be part of the conversation. You know, how much of maybe concern about video games was just born out of like it being the new thing of the time, the way like rock music at one point might have been, you know, villainized.
Well, I look forward to that. Also dropping tomorrow, I did an interview with John Finkel. He's the author of the new Macho Man book. So that will be released on Tuesday. And then later this week, we have got an edition of Talk for Post Wrestling Cafe members, where Wei and I are going to turn on the microphone and we will just see what comes out on Thursday.
I have no idea what we'll be talking about. I mean, but there's plenty, actually. You know,
it's my favorite show to prepare for.
We do one of these, I feel like, quarterly, and there tends to be a lot of stuff that we just probably haven't talked about at all on any of these shows. So it's a lot much more relaxed environment than maybe even something like this, where we don't really have anything else to prepare for except just like sitting down and having conversation just as friends. So it's one of my favorite shows that we do.
I might ask you, I'll give you a heads up, I might ask you what your weekend's looking like coming up.
I feel like I'll be in a much better place to give you a satisfying answer.
All right. All of your news can be found up at postwrestling.com. We go into the penultimate Raw before WrestleMania at the Allstate Arena in Rosemont, Illinois, by way of Chicago. Over 15,000 people in attendance. WWE announcing on the broadcast 15,810. And I mean, they just packed them in for this particular edition of Raw.
CM Punk. So now this is the 11th. TV sellout in a role that they're proclaiming. They have a graphic now.
They now have a graphic. So this is going to be the debate of how you decipher last Monday. If you believe within 200 tickets is the sellout, then the streak continues, because they did sell out Friday for SmackDown. And they did also put up a graphic that Friday in Uncasville is sold out. We know that next week in Brooklyn is going to be sold out. And the night before Mania with the Hall of Fame, that is sold out. The Raw after Mania is sold out. So, I mean, if you're including last Monday and rounding it up to a sellout, then this number is going to continue.
Well, so where do you think it ends? Let's make some predictions at this point.
I'd be very surprised if they could go through the month of April and sell out all Raws and SmackDowns. But, I mean, there will be a post-Mania bump that they may receive. I'd be very surprised if they could get through all of April, though. That's, you know, there is a
real streak at this point.
I mean, you can still do like really solid business, but you're not, you know, filling whatever your capacity setup is, which is
what can they get away with claiming to be a sellout?
Well, they may just not stop. Obviously, I don't know. We're going to see. This could turn into the WWE versus WrestleTix debate. Maybe Polestar getting involved. Punk is seen arriving earlier in the day, and Cody starts the show, and he gets everyone to cheer for Pat McAfee and Michael Cole, and brings up Pat McAfee's interview with Roman Reigns, who was soundly booed. And he said, "This city," or Roman has said, "that I'm a politician who can't keep his promises, but this city of all cities know that when I make a bet, I keep it and make it happen." And he said that he starts mentioning what he has done for certain fans. He's going to be the best man at Anthony's wedding. Gives a shout out to the wrestling club who he's bringing out to WrestleMania. And he clarifies both nights. He's not going to bring him to Philadelphia and only let him go to night one. And then says, "I dress the part and I pretend to be the champion because the champion isn't here." Burn, Seth.
Okay. Well, he's not wearing flashy suit, bell bottoms and, you know, big glasses or platform boots. So, I mean, Seth dresses as the champion in a different way. But I mean, Cody has never really, to my knowledge, given much of an explanation for why he started to all of a sudden wear suits at some point during his independent wrestling run. And this was, I think, as good of an answer as maybe we could have expected. I don't think he was dressing like a champion because the champion wasn't there, like back when he was in like Ring of Honor or something like that. But it works for this current storyline.
He said that he hates Roman's guts, and he stood in the way of Roman Reigns and The Rock having their wank fest at WrestleMania, which was going to be the tagline for this year's Mania, and says he asks the fans to ride with him and fight with him at WrestleMania. And then sometimes you reach a level of popularity where your confidence is through the roof and you feel, you know what, I can get this audience to join me in anything. And that is what we saw here as Cody asked the fans, 15,000 of them, to point together at the WrestleMania sign.
Yeah. And he preceded it, interestingly enough, with a too sweet that he kissed, and then the Bullet Club guns. Now
that's right. Yes,
he did, of course, reference the Bullet Club in his promo on Friday. Are we to look any deeper into that? The fact that he continues to reference the Bullet Club even more than this one off.
Cody's riding a great formula at the moment. Adding the Bullet Club to this, not necessary in 2024.
I guess I just question
as far away from these references as possible.
I suppose I just question why even the hand gestures tonight.
Maybe he's looking for a hand gesture for his fans to engage in.
I think Too Sweet's been taken. Same with the guns, but all right.
So as everyone in this audience is pointing to the WrestleMania sign, The Rock's music plays and this crowd goes nuts as Rock comes out. And I think this was an hour of him walking to the ring, standing in the ring, staring at Cody. Cody stares at The Rock. The Rock stares at Cody. Cody stares back at The Rock. They start chanting CM Punk after a while. And then Rock walks up to him, leans in and whispers to Cody. And we're all left to believe, what has he whispered? And the crowd, when they realize this guy is not going to talk, they all chant Rocky sucks. And Cody is just left to process what he is being told here.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out he leaned in and said, you know, the no blood policy, it's off.
I thought this was a hell of a surprise. I mean, I don't know how many people were aware of this online. I guess I wasn't online enough to be able to tell one way or another. But I think what threw me off was the fact that he, over the past couple of days, kept promoting the April the 1st Brooklyn on sale.
Yeah.
And it's not like
this one was sold out. They didn't need to promote this.
You're right. Absolutely. But the fact that he, on his own social media, was promoting this, you know, Brooklyn show so hard, gave you the impression that that was going to be his first Raw appearance, his first Monday appearance. So the fact that he showed up as a surprise unannounced tonight was a legitimate
penultimate Raw before WrestleMania. I mean,
yes, of course. So yeah, it was a legitimate surprise to me, and it made for I think an incredible atmosphere. I mean, you know, as much as you and I might kid about how long these pauses are, they are grateful.
Oh, they had this crowd. I mean, they're
grateful for every second this man appears on their screen. And I think those ratings were reflected on Tuesday.
So comparing it to our discussion when you had Mercedes Moné debut, and then the idea of, you know, if they should have made a big deal about the fact that she would be coming back at the end, you know, they're going to do a massive angle at the end of Raw. I'm really curious, because this, you are like anyone that is a regular viewer, you're kind of educated to think that, okay, The Rock did his bit and that's it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is one where I don't know if this is really, that said, that final segment was long enough that I'm curious if there's like any growth over it. It's not like it was just, he showed up for 60 seconds. It was a very long, long beatdown.
It was. Yeah. It's also the type of thing where, I mean, could you have really teased The Rock was going to be there at the end, you know, for like what was a surprise sort of attack? I mean, I think for business, you definitely could find a way, but maybe also part of me feels like this is Dwayne wanting to surprise, wanting to, you know, to like maybe sacrifice whatever ratings you would have earned for the sake of like the pop.
Well, that was the segment. And then Jackie tries to find out from The Rock, what did you whisper to Cody? And he says, ask Cody. So we'll hear from Cody later. Judgment Day's in the clubhouse. We learn that Dominic went rogue on Friday, not informing Rhea that he was going to attack Rey. And JD is scolded to go handle Ricochet. And Priest has a big plan to help them for WrestleMania. So that is what's going on in the Judgment Day's clubhouse. Ricochet and JD McDonagh had a fantastic match. There's one thing I am so ready to move on from. It's 2K24 season. And Michael Cole constantly telling us how every performer has an opinion about their rating.
Well, I guess you would be too if you were ranked. You know, like what if I gave you a score as a human being, you know, and you had to be constantly reminded of it for like a whole month?
I get it every day, so I'm fine with that. Yeah. Not one individual besides Michael Cole brings up these ratings. No one ever. You don't ever hear JD.
Are we waiting for the first storyline that based off of like who has a higher?
No, I'm just saying rating? Like Michael Cole feels like he is completely sheltered in this 2K24 world where a 71 rating is keeping JD McDonagh up at night.
Well, he is also privy to discussions that are taking place in the back that we might not be. He's also the guy who's being directed to promote this game as much as he is.
Well, I think this match deserves a high rating because Ricochet, both guys I thought were fantastic here. He goes for the Benadryller and it's stopped. And then he kicks off of JD's chest into a backflip, gets caught by the Spanish Fly and a brainbuster by JD. And then Ricochet hits a Poison Rana off the turnbuckle, which, I mean, Michael Cole using his Lucha Libre influence here. What was that? What was that?
It sounds just as every bit as ridiculous as a Poison Rana to me.
He hits the recoil, and then Dom puts his foot on the rope. There's a springboard 450 landing on JD's knees, and then they go through a second commercial break. JD is hitting him with Kawada kicks, pulls him by the wrist into the air, which Ricochet leaps into a Canadian destroyer. Amazing. And then climbs. Dominic distracts and knocks Ricochet off balance. Dom is ejected for the big pop. And then after a shooting star splash by Ricochet as JD is standing, Ricochet wins in 14 minutes and 23 seconds. This match was great.
Absolutely fantastic match. I mean, I think a huge reaction for Ricochet, which continues to surprise me to this day because of how low importance he feels. Like this is a guy who I don't know what they could do to make him feel like a threat anymore. Like he impresses all the time, every single time he's out there in the ring, but it's just the booking is never consistent enough. And the character development is never consistent enough to make you think that something's actually happening with him. Nonetheless, the guy continues to like be so spectacular. And this was a match where they let him do a whole lot of like, you know, fancy moves, Poison Rana, Canadian Destroyer. And they were very effective in making this match feel special for this crowd.
CM Punk got replica title duty. He had to walk backstage with his Chicago Cubs championship, so at least it fit with the character.
Punk comes out. This is at the end of the first hour, and the crowd's going wild for him. This is his first appearance since the Survivor Series in this building, and repeats that he will be at WrestleMania. His elbow's not 100%, but my mouth still works, and said that some people have asked if I would host WrestleMania, and a decade ago, I would have thought that was beneath me, but I really loved for WrestleMania to be in Chicago. Says I could be a referee, and says there's a lot of people out there who like to talk about me, and mentions Pat McAfee's interview with Roman Reigns. As Pat McAfee, this Roman Reigns interview is just getting a ton of promotion here from Cody, from Punk. He says, well, Roman's earned the right to bring my name up. We'll see each other down the road. Then he brings up Seth Rollins, says we don't see eye to eye. And it's funny that he mentions my injuries when he's got two bad knees. I find that funny. The Rock hasn't brought up my name, maybe because he realizes from a decade ago that his arms were too short to box with God. And finally, Drew McIntyre. He says, I don't live on the internet, so I've kept my mouth quiet and I handle things like a man, face to face or at press conferences, whichever. And with that, Drew McIntyre comes out and immediately CM Punk, stop this stupid song, and turns off Drew's theme. Now, before we get into this, Wei, what did Drew McIntyre get up to on Monday afternoon in Chicago?
Drew McIntyre did some sightseeing in the city of Chicago, you know, to a place he's wanted to visit for quite a while. He pulled up to Mindy's Bakery and just, I mean, I think they're doing voting for like one of the Slammy Awards as a best social media star. Give it to Drew already, because he has been so tremendously entertaining in his promos. Pulls up to Mindy's Bakery and
filmed this himself.
Closed on Mondays and Tuesdays, and just proceeds to cut a wonderful, just sort of Drew McIntyre style promo, both on Mindy's as well as, of course, the names, the person who made the bakery famous. So he's worth a follow.
I'm so fascinated by this place and what level of fan shows up at this place now when they are in Chicago. Like, has this replaced the house from Home Alone when people go to Chicago to go check out?
I think for a wrestling fan, maybe, you know, it's that and like maybe pro wrestling tees. Like, what are the other landmarks?
You would think of all Mondays, this would maybe be the Monday that Mindy decides, you know what, we're going to open up today.
You would think so. You would think so. But something tells me they do well enough business on the other days of the week that they don't need to open, even on a Monday when wrestling fans are in town.
Okay. I feel bad for that. Whatever the lime drink was that he was having, like no love for that drink. It's all gone to Mindy's.
I don't know what drink he was having. I didn't
exactly. Recognize. He was drinking all those with the cupcakes.
Was he? Oh, you mean Punk in the press conference?
Yeah. At the press conference.
You
don't even remember him drinking.
I don't.
He had like a bag full of these cans and he was going one by one pounding these things back.
I think I would be pissed if I was you know, the person who the company that made those. Woo Energy, Jack Wagner says. Are we to believe this?
It was not Woo Energy.
Oh no, it was not. Okay.
So Drew is immediately chastised for his theme song and then called a bitch ass by CM Punk. Boy, I don't think anyone was following any language restrictions on this particular show.
Is this part of the new edict? You know, are people seeing, hey, like a board member can get away with it? Why can't I? What's going on?
Wait till we get the go home promos next Monday.
Well, we got wank off.
Wank off.
Got
bitch ass. I mean, dude, yeah. Rock was just
this is what happens when you fuck with the Rock.
But that's next week.
Yeah. Shitheads we got on this show.
Okay. Yeah.
It's playoff season. You know, all bets are off.
Drew reminds him of what happened the last time I was in the ring with you. And Punk comes back asking, are you the Scottish psychopath or an internet troll in a skirt? And Drew says, you better watch that. You could get canceled in this day and age for a comment like that. And Punk says that I never had to put another man's name on a shirt to sell it. And dude, Punk and Drew, they were just firing off at each other with one-liners. Drew says, you know, Punk, you're straight edge, yet you spend all your time in rehab. And says, I used to hate you, but now you complete me. And Punk is just groaning at this comparison. Drew says he wants him to be at WrestleMania because I have always been the chosen one. And Punk responds, yeah, who chose you?
who chose you? Say his name. And dude, Drew had this look of, man, checkmate. I can't respond here. And Drew just goes quiet as Punk says, who was that paragon of good virtue that chose you? It certainly wasn't the people, and lists off different crowds. And Drew says, why don't you be the guest commentator at WrestleMania so you can watch me win the title?
So I guess what we had here was the first, even what you would consider veiled reference at Vince McMahon since.
Not even that veiled, I thought. Like,
no, not at all. But yeah, they were certainly approaching a line that, I mean, you wouldn't expect anybody, maybe except CM Punk, to sort of tiptoe around. And it, I thought it was like kind of the perfect thing for this sort of interaction. Now, this entire segment was a very loose feeling segment where like they were at times stepping over each other. And it felt,
I'll take that any day of the week over. I'm going to talk for 3 minutes while you just sit there and take all my insults. And now it's your turn. And
yeah, it felt unusual for a WWE segment because usually they feel so rehearsed, you know, they usually feel, I mean, even at their best, like I'm not even saying like rehearsal is bad. Sometimes you really need rehearsal. But this was unusual because it was Punk cutting Drew off. While Drew, you could tell, was trying to set something up. But I think what made this work, obviously, because these two are two of the best promo guys in the entire company right now, and both are so quick-witted, Drew was able to like circle back to his point very, very well. And Punk had some great lines, great counters. And something like that Vince line really does make you wonder, I mean, how much of Punk's role in all this was just off the cuff and improvised? Because it certainly seemed to catch Drew off guard.
Yeah, I mean, I would not be the name I would want to be tiptoeing around on my television at this point to be bringing up, but it was one that, I mean, was very glaring. Seth comes out to join in on the fun, calling them children, and crowd is all behind Punk here against Rollins, and Rollins acknowledges this and starts polling the crowd if Punk should be on commentary. Crowd did not seem too interested of him being on commentary at WrestleMania. And it was
totally backfired.
Like, yeah. They were they start chanting referee. And then Rollins is like, yeah, look at his counting arm. And with that, Punk gets down on the mat and counts three with his left arm to show he could be the referee, which to me, I thought it was like, if your payoff here is he's on commentary and you're showing him here being the ref, this was certainly a bizarre setup for this.
I think this was just kind of Punk being, you know, more of a sort of, mischievous, you know, and like you could tell he was having a hell of a time at the response that Rollins got for that poll.
Oh, I felt Punk was improvising everything at this point because he gets up and then he walks it back stating, I think I'm too biased to be the referee, and then he just calls them dipshits. Like, this was.
He calls Drew and Seth shitheads or dipshits.
And Drew's just like, PG, brother. And Rollins thinks nothing of CM Punk. I haven't thought about you once since I was last in the ring with you. So you're a non-factor to me. I don't care what you do at WrestleMania. You can be the referee. You can narrate my finest moment on commentary because it's the closest you're ever going to get to this world title ever again. And just tells Punk to stay out of my way. So Punk agrees to be on commentary. And he says, I'm going to do what all of your gimmicks, what your wife couldn't do for you, Seth, I'm going to make you interesting at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. And then this is like lost in it, but Drew starts reciting Stan. And I thought that might have been the fun. I laughed out loud at this guy. He's like getting into the ring. And man, he had been rehearsing this on the whole ride back from Mindy's. I thought this was a pretty goddamn entertaining segment. I'm sure it was a train wreck for those that were maybe producing it, but I love the chaos on television. And I thought Drew really elevated himself in this environment, and just seeing him, really just him and Punk were just great playing off one another.
I'm sure it was a train wreck for anybody trying to time the segment, because for the rest of the show, I felt
this was over 20 minutes or so. This might've gone almost 25. It was a lengthy segment.
And there's a good chance like this was planned for 20 minutes, but it was 20 minutes uninterrupted. And therefore every other match that came after this had to kind of pay for it with like a lot more commercials than I think we're used to. But nonetheless, when you get something this good, if they can go
for an hour. We also had some nothing matches coming up that have like almost like a very little consequence, like when you look about your time allotment as well.
So this entire like Mania run up, I think will, you know, in hindsight be very much remembered for The Rock. It'll be very much remembered for, I think, Cody and Seth's and Roman's sort of associations with The Rock, which really like The Rock at this point really does kind of feel like the nucleus of at least the success of this company. In this segment, they managed to make CM Punk, I think, feel not as big as The Rock, but like yet another like major nucleus that, you know, the other stars can circle around. And I thought it just created another must see type of like feeling for a segment on the show that didn't even involve Dwayne, didn't even involve Cody. I mean, this is like the type of energy that I think you could only get from somebody who's at the level of a CM Punk, you know, who maybe I would have had my doubts like in some of his earlier interactions on during this comeback, but this was CM Punk like full force, you know, this was like fully confident Phil Brooks with a live microphone, and you have no idea what he's about to say. If he sees an opportunity to throw a Vince line in there, he's going to take it and he's going to see how the rest will react. Chicago goes against the script. He's going to play along with it and see how Rollins will react. And credit to Rollins for steering the ship back. You know, much like with Drew, I think the novelty of the segment from that point forward after the poll kind of went awry was to see how Rollins was going to be able to save it. And he didn't necessarily like take it back. He was more so like, Punk, whatever you want to do, you want to be a referee, you want to be a commentator, it doesn't matter, because, you know, whatever. And they got to the end point that they wanted to, but it was like, it was just interesting to see live TV and like an unpredictable crowd kind of go against what they probably planned initially.
So are you saying that this segment to you and I was more effective than, am I going to be at WrestleMania? What are the first four letters of Philadelphia? It's Phil.
This was a bit better than that. Yeah. But that was just the tee up for this, wasn't it? This was a great segment. It was just fun, completely like captivating, and like had sort of this unpredictable energy attached to it. I think it certainly ranks up there with one of the top segments of this entire WrestleMania run.
Now, I say this with the idea that we could very well hear coming out of Raw that people were absolutely furious for some of the things that were said. But I thought one of the positives, if you are a fan or a viewer, is watching this segment, and in particular Punk, just that idea of here is a character that you don't know where they are going to go in a promo. And instead of everyone is kind of this, you know, soldier that is following this WWE language. I mean, they have greatly gotten away from the WWE speak in a lot of their promos, but you still have it very much that, you know, everyone's operating under this narrow view, unless you're The Rock, unless you're somebody that can go above and beyond. And I think that it just makes a lot of these segments feel more, there's an edge to them when you know that you don't know what someone is going to say and might go outside of the lines every now and then.
So I feel like that's very much dictated by who's the person saying it. You know, how much trust can they put in a performer to improvise while sticking to time cues? I mean, obviously, if you're The Rock or if you're CM Punk, maybe time cues aren't as important. And, you know, if you're a proven ratings draw, then they're maybe not as important. They'll maybe customize the show to you. But if you're, I'm sorry, but like, I'm just the random name.
This is probably going to be the peak of the show. Above the first segment. I think this 9 o'clock crossover with Punk and for the length it went, if this isn't, it'll be number two.
But if you're like a Ricochet or like, you know, I don't know, even a Chad Gable or like a Candice LeRae, and you're out there, I mean, I don't know how comfortable the performers might feel to
Candice LeRae calling Maxine a dipshit on live television.
I don't know how comfortable the performers themselves might feel without having a proper script where every word is written. I mean, there's been criticism, I think, of like, you know, how like a Mercedes Moné promo might sound kind of WWE style in a AEW. Do we know that she doesn't prefer like talking like a WWE style promo? Like, do we know that she's comfortable improvising on her own?
There's a lot of performers who have come up not knowing any other way. I mean, that's their television experience, is being in that system. And there were some that, I mean, they would rely on scripts. Like, it's not going to be, I think the vast majority prefer, like, you know, bullet points and having that freedom. And then there's others that are not at that level, that, you know, the idea of going out there for 10 minutes to talk and being given a loose guideline probably scares the hell out of them.
Yeah.
So then we had a Shinsuke Nakamura video. He is going to turn Jey Uso's dream at WrestleMania into a nightmare tonight. And then the big news coming to WrestleMania, Meek Mill.
You know, those of us in Toronto are very familiar with Meek Mill, of course. I guess they were kind of teeing this up on social media over the past week with Meek Mill asking Triple H for tickets, and then Triple H saying, "I got you." And I wonder what they're going to do. I mean, I would think
maybe these two are the social media stars of the year ahead of Drew.
Yeah, I don't know if social media has been too kind to Meek Mill over the past couple weeks. I mean, people who I guess are following some of the Diddy drama might be able to speak more on it than me. But what do you think this means? Like, performance, or like, is he in charge of a video? Like the way you know, the intro videos tend to have a celebrity attached to him. What do you think?
Maybe he does someone's entrance. Maybe something like that. I would assume it's like some kind of performance on the show.
Yeah. I think it's a very sort of like modern act, you know, for a wrestling company to pick to attach to the city.
It's no Rick Ross, but
Not for Philadelphia.
No. Candice LeRae and Ivy Nile, we literally come back and they're in the ring and the match begins, and there isn't much to this one. They actually had like a story to tell here, where Indy is in the corner and is very reluctant to go with Candice's cheating ways. Maxine's in the opposite corner. And so Candice LeRae fakes a knee injury, and Indy has the chance to attack Ivy from behind on the floor, but she doesn't do it. So Ivy charges at Candice as she's selling the knee injury, and Candice just pops up and stacks her in the corner using the rope for leverage and pins Ivy Nile in a minute 52. I mean, this was just not a whole lot that they had to work with.
This was a casualty of the prior segment. I mean, in more ways than one. I think even following, you know, a CM Punk Drew Seth Rollins segment was already going to be a tough enough task for these two. But the fact that they got their entrances cut, which probably meant that they got their video recap cut, took certainly a lot more engagement out of the storyline from these two. So this was pretty much a write-off week, I think, for this story.
And again, that's why I look at this, how this third hour performs in comparison to others, because you feel like, man, we got all the stars, the big stars have been out. They have done their big talking segments. You're not getting them again. It's just these, and no matches that I would say that were just jumping off the page at you for this last hour that they had announced. New Day is with DIY. I mean, just some terrible comedy here about their tag team names. Miz and Truth come out, and R-Truth confuses Pat McAfee for JBL. They, much like Punk, R-Truth will also be on commentary tonight for this friendly matchup between tag teams.
So I guess the main thing coming out of this is the fact that you could see Drew McIntyre and Paul Heyman speaking in the background. It's one of the Paul Levesque sort of background shots. So they are teasing some involvement of Drew with the Bloodline. Of course, the very faction that
Can we keep a list on the forum of all the background things and see whatever gets paid off with these background interactions?
Maybe, yeah. But this is one that, like, you know, plays directly into the story. And for Drew, it kind of comes full circle, right? You know, he turned a heel because of the Bloodline.
Yes.
And now he might be working with them, which is, I think, like the outcome a lot of us might have predicted. So we'll see.
So he's mad at Jay, but he's not mad at Jimmy.
Not anymore.
For their non-involvement at the Clash at the Castle.
Well, this is Paul Heyman trying to, you know, smooth things out, I think, between them. Maybe they'll have a nice sushi dinner on the plane, and they'll hash things out between Drew and Roman. And I mean, I don't think it's far-fetched to think that we could see Drew involvement in that tag team match to close night one.
Yeah, I would think as much. Mm-hmm. DIY and the New Day, quick match here. Famouser is hit by Kofi Kingston onto Johnny Gargano. They hit double super kicks on Ciampa, so Truth then throws to commercial. We come back. Gargano hits a suicide dive onto both members when the Judgment Day run down. Match is thrown out in 6.5 minutes, and the crowd is chanting for R-Truth as Judgment Day is beating down everyone. And finally, R-Truth makes a comeback, and the crowd goes wild, but then he is hit with a razor's edge and the coup de grace. And next week, they're going to do an 8-man tag with Miz, Truth, and DIY, or sorry, it's New Day and DIY against the Judgment Day.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Who knows how much time might have been cut from this one too, but I mean, ultimately the end result was the same. Like you just wanted to promote the ladder match and the Judgment
Day.
This
was 6 minutes with a 3-minute break.
Sure. There you go. I mean, I thought R-Truth was pretty fun on commentary.
Jackie Redmond asks Cody, what did The Rock say to you? And Cody said, I cannot repeat it. Like, are you kidding? We can say anything on this show. And he says it was a promise that The Rock cannot keep. So Kathy Kelly is with Gunther and reacts to Sami Zayn's comments from last week. And Gunther says, I would have said it to his face, but he stormed away like an angry little child and said they were empty words from Sami. He knows that Sami doesn't believe he can beat him. Insults Chicago and says, I don't even think Sami Zayn can beat Bronson Reed tonight. And when asked if he will be out there to scout, Gunther does not give an answer.
Yes.
Andrade and Giovanni Vinci. This was Andrade's third match since returning to the company.
Is that right? This was supposed to be Andrade and Ivar. And I think Fightful reported that Ivar was not cleared due to medical reasons that we aren't aware of yet. So it became Giovanni Vinci.
Yes. Yes. A rare switch of a WWE lineup these days. So Andrade hit his moonsault, then the double moonsault for a two count. He goes for the three amigos, but is cut off after one and then lands the double knees and a spinning elbow before hitting his finisher, The Message, to win the match in 7 minutes. The Message.
Yes, The Message. Was he using this in AEW? I don't remember.
He was using like the
Hammerlock,
El Idolo, the Hammerlock DDT.
So this is a new finisher, like almost like a double hook, double underhook flipping type of thing.
Dealy. The Message.
The Message. Did you get The Message?
In a bottle.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it seemed to get a good reaction by the end, but this was kind of cold for the most part. No stakes attached to it. No real hype for it. You know, we know Andrade has something going on with the Judgment Day, but we don't exactly know what, nor like what the outcome of this match would have, you know.
I didn't know what the purpose of this match was. Like, there was no angle. There was nothing that you were hinting towards. It was just a cold match in the third hour and really had no purpose on the show for me. Rhea and Dominic come out to start the third hour, and she claims she's not getting enough attention from Becky Lynch, who keeps fighting weekly, and says she's now getting impatient. So as Dominic goes to speak, Becky comes out and says that Rhea never wrestles on Raw anymore and says, you just post a clip online or a photo and the fans eat it up, and says, Rhea, you show your ass, but I bust my ass. And Rhea says that Becky says, Rhea, you have not experienced the role of not being the chosen one. Oh yeah. Who named you the non-chosen one? Name them. Becky has been the chosen one and the unchosen one. And she has survived. I don't know quite how that works in a work setting here.
Okay,
how do you become the unchosen one?
So do you agree that in the UFC there can be chosen ones?
I mean, you win your fights, and that's gonna.
But even if you win your fights, like, would Demetrius Johnson ever claim to be a chosen one? Would Zhang Weili ever claim to be a chosen one?
Like someone right now, Bilal Muhammad, he's won like 9 fights in a row, and this guy still has not received a title fight yet. So yeah, there is some of those. But I mean, this woman's getting her title match. So I mean,
Becky,
yes.
I guess I think it rings true for Becky, because when she came in as part of the Four Horsewomen, she was definitely not the chosen one, even among, you know, Becky and Charlotte and Sasha.
Okay. Well, Rhea calls her a cockroach, meaning you're hard to kill, but it's not impossible. But she's not going to kill her at WrestleMania. I'm glad we got that out of the way. But then says she's going to send Becky home to sit next to your daughter, and you'll hear your daughter call me mommy. And the crowd starts chanting mommy, and Becky's got to do this like fiery promo in response as the whole crowd is like chanting mommy. And Becky just like flips it up to like 11 for bringing up my daughter. That's not funny. And mentions how her dad never got to meet her daughter. And if she did, or if he did, she would be very proud, and says that it's not a joke to me. And neither of us are going to be the same after WrestleMania.
She said her father,
dad would be
her father would be proud. Exactly. Her dad would be proud of a lot of her accomplishments, but he would be the most proud of the mother she's become.
And Rhea really had no response here to this retort. Yeah. And then Becky just drills Dominic, and then they get into a big brawl and a pull apart afterward. So now she has gotten Becky's attention.
I mean, I'm curious to know what you felt about this segment first. Because it doesn't sound like it resonated much with you.
I mean, it was like a really impassioned promo. It just, to me, kind of came out of nowhere here in the midst of this.
I don't disagree. Like, I thought overall this was a really strong segment that added some much needed substance to this program. Like, it's funny because like we've seen these two paired together for months now. Like, they've done tease after tease, but we don't really know what the grudge is other than like, I want to win your championship. And sometimes that's enough. But I
thought the best one was when Becky said that I don't know if I'm better than you. And that's why I need to face you to see if I am better than you, because I do have that doubt. Their first segment, which was months ago, like this was before the Rumble, I thought was the most effective one and made it very clear this was the direction.
It could be because it's been so spread out that like it doesn't feel like that note has been that sort of concentrated on. Now, I don't even know if that was really brought up in this segment. This segment was almost kind of about something altogether different. This was about like Rhea getting by with, you know, showing photos, being part of like, you know, a meme on the internet, you know, with her doing stink faces and stuff. And Becky saying it's being a champion's not about that. It's about defending your title week after week. It's almost like a completely different story than maybe what they've been trying to tell, which has been a bit of a story of like Becky's confidence, but maybe it ties in. I guess the part of
Rikishi's got to be showing up at WrestleMania in some kind of fashion.
He's well booked all the way to SummerSlam.
Rikishi. I mean, he's got everything tied up here. His sons, the tribal chief,
Rhea Ripley. I thought like Becky's, you know, lines coming to the defense of like her daughter being brought up were like the most emotional I've seen Becky, you know, in any promo. And that includes the promo she cut when she had to relinquish the title to announce her pregnancy. It was like the most sort of like real and emotional I've seen Becky. But it did come, unfortunately, at a time when this was a crowd that was very much kind of wanting to cheer Rhea Ripley as the baby face. Mm-hmm. And therefore that sort of transition to something so serious felt kind of awkward and a little bit forced, unfortunately. Now, like what could have been done, you know, better to ease that way when the crowd loves Rhea Ripley this much? I'm not so sure, but I do see like the effort that Becky is putting into this to try to tell a proper story. And I think Rhea is still one of those like talents who's really good at delivery, but I think still relies a little too much on what's written for her. And so in my opinion, like Becky sounds like a real person, but Rhea just kind of falls short of that a little bit.
Sami Zayn is walking past Chad Gable, and Zayn says they have nothing to speak about. You said what you felt last week. Gable says, Gunther wants to ruin your focus. You need to focus on Bronson Reed tonight and not Gunther. So get your head out of your ass. And Zayn's like, cool, thanks, man. And they shook hands and it's like, I appreciate that. So Bronson Reed against Sami Zayn. Reed is drops him with an avalanche and a shoulder block off the apron. They go through the break. Reed has a busted up nose, and then there's clothesline attempts by Zayn, finally gets him off the feet, and then Gunther walks out. This takes Zayn's head out of the match. He's focusing on Gunther, manages a tornado DDT, but then he's eyeing Gunther again, and that causes him to delay the haluva kick, and he is stopped with a lariat and hit with the tsunami as Bronson Reed pins Sami Zayn in 9.5 minutes. There are most characters that I would think this would be a terrible decision to go with ahead of WrestleMania. But they're obviously, I mean, Zayn is one of those characters that they feel they can just beat and beat and beat. Because
and he gets stronger.
Yeah, that's their thinking here.
Now there's a limit, of course, to like I hate even that I
there is. That. And I wouldn't say I was like totally on board with this idea to build this up. Mainly because I don't think people see Bronson Reed as this like emerging contender either, even though he is set up to be one now.
The win is meaningless for Reed. Like, it's not like he's going on to do anything significant at WrestleMania. He's not the one challenging Gunther for the championship. Like, he's just sort of like an accessory to Sami Zayn's story. So, I mean, when they say like wins and losses don't matter, I mean, I definitely would disagree, but I would also agree with that in that storytelling matters, airtime matters more than, you know, wins. And if this was the way this Sami Zayn appearance ended on this show, I would have been pretty upset, but this was only serving to tell a bigger story with Sami.
Yeah, I almost feel like this would have been more effective if this were like, you know, if Sami Zayn had that loss that Chad Gable had to Gunther, and he's questioning himself in this whole lead up, can I beat him after I was embarrassed by Gunther? Instead, they're doing this like Gunther's in my head and I'm doubting myself and I've got 2 weeks to overcome this doubt.
Which is a good enough amount of time to tell the story, don't you think? Now, he's actually just got 1 week to, you know, convey that he's gained his confidence. But would you care to recap this, the next Sami Zayn segment, just so we can maybe talk about?
So Zayn is furious backstage and Gable calms him, stating that you let Gunther get into your head. He knew what he was doing. Zayn says, I knew what he was doing and I still let him do it. How did I let that happen? Gable says that what he does is he plants seeds of doubt. And that's what he did here. You're one of the best I've ever been in the ring with. And with Gunther, it's not just physical, it's mental. And you can't give in to those doubts. You need a different approach. And if what you're looking for is a different approach, then we can talk.
Yeah.
And I can second you at Mania and I can get a payoff at WrestleMania without having to work.
Well, there's certainly that. So let me just say, by the end of this show, I really did enjoy what they did with Gable and Sami Zayn and even Gunther here. I think so much of the strength of this story is going to be reliant on Sami and Gable's backstage acting performances, and Sami in particular has been really, really good here. You know, the way he was like
amateur selling wrestling Sami Zayn. Come out in a singlet and
let's block that out of your head right now, because I don't think Sami Zayn is joining the
Alpha
Academy.
1 week to do a vignette, okay, of these two of the Rocky story, okay? We literally have got
we're getting a montage.
Yeah, we got Apollo Creed. These two are gonna be doing
Hearts
Apollo
on fire. Creed,
Sylvester Stallone in the water,
yeah,
hugging.
Okay. Sign me up for Bill Conti, less Hearts on Fire.
God, Gunther's going to be Ivan Drago.
Yeah.
And then Carl Weathers is going to be Sami Zayn. And Gable. What? Gable is going to see his friend die. And Gable's going to have to step up to face Drago.
I mean, pick your, I guess, Apollo Creed in this case. But I don't think they're going any campy route here. I think they recognize the strength of like what they have in the performances of a Sami Zayn. And I feel like I have a prediction in where they're going here. They are in a perfect position to replicate the Jordan Devlin, David Starr, Walter story from OTT, where Sami on the biggest stage, he's beaten down for like 99% of this match, but then somehow he digs deep, finally unlocks this thing within his own confidence and delivers a Huluva kick. Gunther is down. The streak is about to end. 1, 2. Chad Gable pulls the referee out of the ring and says he can't stand to let somebody do what he was supposed to do. And that result would create, I think, elevated statuses for both Sami and for Chad Gable. And with Gunther still remaining champion, still remaining the sort of ultimate destination for either of them, you know, get Sean Ryan to make the video. I would love to see that result.
Turns out, Sami, your biggest Achilles heel isn't seeds of doubt. It's your trust.
Beauty.
Love it.
Maybe it is time for a montage. You know, we do have to speed up the process here next week.
It is worth noting that one of not the night after Raw, like mid-April, they do have a Raw in the Bell Center in Montreal. So that will be probably a big Raw for a Sami Zayn. Next week on the show, yes, they've announced the 8-man tag, and then The Rock and Roman Reigns will be
on the Ultimate Raw before WrestleMania. Jay's getting ready and Rollins comes up. Something doesn't feel right tonight. Him and Cody will have his back. And we go to Jey Uso and Shinsuke Nakamura. I was like, there's no way these two could be going 20 minutes here. But they didn't. Cole mentions that nearly a million matches have been played as Jey Uso in 2K24. So these are the new ways to gauge popularity. Nearly a million matches played as Jey Uso.
We kind of kid, but like, is that not a worthwhile metric? You know,
I don't know what the comparisons are. Is that the highest? Is that the fifth highest?
I don't think they would mention it if it wasn't a big deal, I would think. You know,
I think more people are playing Jey Uso than anybody in this video game.
That I don't know. That I don't know. But now, does that correlate with merchandise sales, for instance?
I'm sure this dude's selling a lot of merchandise these days.
I think so, too.
So they go through a commercial break. Jay's firing back with strikes. The crowd is chanting, misses a hip attack. And then Jay lands a super kick, running knee by Nakamura. Both men are down. And then Sokoa and Jimmy appear through the crowd. Rollins and Cody run down to attack them and fight to the back when Drew shows up and runs Seth into the post with a Future Shock DDT. We glossed over at the end of the talking segment earlier that Drew did get laid out with a stomp by Rollins as well. Mm. So Drew was coming back here for revenge on Seth, posting him and then hitting him with the Future Shock on the floor. Crowd is chanting for CM Punk. Punk was out of here. He was no, thank you. Not risking any more physical injuries. He's researching stem cells. And then Jay super kicks and spears Nakamura 7.5 minutes. And there were 8 minutes left of Raw. So, I mean, God knows what was left to be planned here. So we cut to the back and there's Cody fighting with Jimmy when Solo Sikoa appears. And then The Rock jumps Cody, just jumps him from behind with what had to have been the world's strongest forearm to the back, because Cody was destroyed from this forearm. And man, there are a few baby faces that can get away with this long selling. It was prolonged. This man was beaten and beaten and beaten and beaten and beaten.
See, for me, it worked because it was such a novelty to see The Rock get physical. We haven't seen that yet.
What did you... Dude, The Rock was moving around like very gingerly. Okay,
yes,
like,
he was.
This guy was not exerting any strenuous activity here, and this was all Cody flying backstage for him at every strike, as The Rock, I think, just wanted to stay in one piece.
Well, I mean, at that age, with as big of a payday as he's about to get for the big show, and as reliant as people are going to be on him,
I think he's got a lot bigger paydays than Mania coming his way.
Fine, yes, but could you blame him for taking it easy?
It does make us look at like WrestleMania, like this guy's got to do a big like 25-30 minute match, even in a tag scenario. And yes, I mean, it is a question that we are going into. Like, this guy's not had a real match in 11 years.
I think even in the tag match, I mean, it offers opportunity for him to work a style like this. But I also think there's a storyline reason. He's a much bigger man now than he was the last time we even saw him.
He's a big man.
And I think it kind of serves his final boss character well to work more like a heavy big man, you know, who works slow, who, you know, one big clubbing forearm is enough to like knock somebody down. Like it works for this character right now. Plus, he had to like deliver like, you know, like 2 pages of dialogue in this entire scene.
Well, I mean, if this is, I mean, we have talked about the directing of one leaf fitting. This was like the most egregious. Let's all stop and get a perfect shot of our brand new vodka sponsor here on this bus as The Rock delivered dialogue into the camera. I mean, this could not have been positioned any more perfectly for them. And then they go out into the goddamn rain. Okay.
It was like The Notebook.
I didn't think Reigns was showing up on this show, but it turns out made a cameo here. And they fought out in the rain. Forget tearing something in this brawl. They could have caught pneumonia out here in the Chicago winter. So he just destroys Cody. He's talking into the camera, busts open Cody. So we got blood. And then Rock reveals his Mama Rhodes weightlifting belt. And he delivers on his promise, wiping Cody's blood over the weightlifting belt. They're getting close-ups of the wound. He's rubbing the blood right on his hand. And
I mean, this is a pretty intense angle by WWE standards of how squeamish they have been with blood. And I mean, going close up, like, I really thought Rock was excellent here in this. And I mean, Cody was, I mean, again, like this guy was just a ping pong ball for like the last 10 minutes of or 8 minutes of Raw.
It's a great build to what will not be the main event of WrestleMania this year. I mean, again, Roman, who like he's all but an afterthought in all of this. And maybe it's being done to serve some sort of bigger story between The Rock and Roman. But man, you look at the difference between a segment like this and what we got on Friday, and it's just. There's no comparison. You know, Dwayne has really kind of carried at least the heel side of things in this entire program. Cody has been tremendous as well. I don't think you can ask for a better babyface. It's just kind of, you know, a shame that like the person wrestling on night two, the person who's holding actually this entire championship is the person that we are like spending no time to think about even. So this was a great segment here. Like reminded me of like, you know, your great Attitude Era segments where the last 10 minutes of the show are spent, you know, on a bridge or like outside of the arena doing some sort of crazy, I don't know, rain soaked, blood soaked, all the fluid soaked type of closing angle. And The Rock was just really, really tremendous here.
It didn't have to be this way, but now it's the only way. And dude, maybe the most egregious heel tactic of this year was Rock just spitting like this big loogie, like right next to Cody's face.
All the fluids. Gross, like I said,
just gross. And that's how the show ended. So, I mean, the show was bookended by The Rock and Cody. And I guess what he whispered into him was, what did he whisper into him?
Leave a comment below.
That was it. That is exactly what Dwayne Johnson was uttering to him. And we go to super chats and to your feedback.
Just looking at like this build though, I mean, there's no way that I don't think The Rock is involved in some way in that night two main event.
Oh, I think you're getting definitely. I think that's the point. And I think that you want to come off of Mania. At least the way I would be looking at it is that Cody and The Rock is the match coming out of Mania at a date to be determined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for that reason, like if you have Rock win on night one and there's a purpose to it, then great.
Yeah.
You have a huge match for your champion to build towards.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the main event stuff is to me just like, it is like, I won't say carrying the shows, but it's like, they are like all the main event participants, Seth, Drew included, and Punk, which I include in this whole mix now because he's in the world title mix with commentary now as well.
That's like, kind of what's novel about this Mania, isn't it? Like you're actually talking about three WrestleMania three matches here.
You're talking like seven people.
And if we include Jay and Jimmy, that's kind of like four people, four feuds, four matches at Mania. That's all kind of tied into this entire storyline that they're telling with the Bloodline. So I think they're kind of like incorporating every element and blending all of them together in segments like the final one here really well. Sammy, Chad Gable, and Gunther, in my opinion, is in really good shape. Becky, I thought tonight cut a hell of a promo for the for the match with Rhea, but still maybe that program overall is kind of lacking in interest, especially when compared to
you've still got the two biggest stars in a match. And I think that one is, I think that's in a lot better position than your SmackDown counterpart.
Agreed. And then your ladder match is just kind of carried more so like, you know, by the ladder concept itself. Right. So we're to one more Raw to go for WrestleMania.
One more Raw.
Yes. Yeah. This was the penultimate edition of Raw before WrestleMania.
That's how these calendars work.
Let's go to some of your feedback, including a super chat here from Kurt Angle.
Oh, thanks, Kurt.
$20. Thank you. He says, thank you very much to Way for speaking to me earlier. Keep it up, guys. And I'm hoping to cash in on my ultimate throw right hug from you, John, someday. Ha ha ha. Ignore my ancient YouTube account name. From Glenn.
Oh, it's Glenn. Oh, okay.
Thank you so much, Glenn. Yes, Glenn had a merchandising question that I helped him out with earlier.
Oh, okay.
So you're more than welcome, Glenn. Thank you so much for the super chat and all the best. All right, let's go to forum.postwrestling.com.
Okay, let's go to, we'll start off here with the from Bill. With the real life heat between Punk Rollins and Drew, can you give some insight on how they work out their promos? Do you think they have to clear the basics with one another? With Hunter, is the heat strong enough where they can't even discuss anything face to face? You know, just the fact that someone has a response like this means that this segment was very effective in conveying what they are trying to in this segment.
Yeah. Like, I mean, as far as like how much they tell each other beforehand, it's impossible for us to know, right? Could there be some things that, you know, were kind of left to be said out there? I don't think we can completely rule that out, but I would say the core structure of like what notes they had to hit were probably all laid out pretty carefully. All right, let's go to Benjamin, who says, not digging Punk using a man wearing a skirt line to diminish Drew or his your wife, and high heels dropped to Seth. They were lazy and gross. Overall, show seemed kind of slow and a little scattered this week in contrast to previous weeks. I could see like why maybe, you know, him making fun of Drew for wearing a skirt would get that reaction. I don't disagree. I think it would have been nice if he said something like, Roddy Piper, there was a man in a kilt. When Drew, you wear it, it's a skirt. I mean, I don't even know if that sounded any better. I thought your wife, though, was more to say, his line was that,
Wife can't make you interesting. It was not exactly a diminishment of Becky. It was actually a compliment that even she can't make you interesting like this superstar that you're married to.
Exactly. Yeah.
From Muggin, Raw had the feeling of we're getting close to WrestleMania. The promos tonight had everyone waking up and choosing violence. The Seth Drew Punk segment was insane. The Rock making an unadvertised appearance and the closing segment, complete with a bit of color, was stunning. Chicago brought it as usual. Am I reaching by seeing Cena and Austin on that truck in the background could be a sign of them showing up in Philadelphia? I don't think the truck would be your, hey, let's shoot the truck to let everyone know. They want you to buy vodka when they're shooting their trucks. That's about it. But either of them showing up, I don't think you'd dismiss that. I think Cena has said as much that I think people expect them there. And if there's an idea for Austin, he would be there too.
Can you see either of them being involved in this main event storyline or something separate?
I don't know where they would fit. I mean, if you had the right creative idea, sure.
Both of them have like rivalries with The Rock, but does it necessarily play into this current storyline?
Well, maybe Austin can line up CM Punk's latest program that he's got for his injury rehab when he comes back. He's got a laundry list of guys and add Austin to the list as well.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, let's go to Brian from New Jersey, who says, wild episode hyping up the top matches of WrestleMania, but the WWE champion was even more of an afterthought tonight. Nuclear heat for Cody versus Rock, except the main event of Mania weekend is not Cody versus The Rock. So it makes up good and bad. It gives me the impression Reigns would have to build up his heat in more physical angles, including night one of WrestleMania. Also, Rock momentarily thinking he's on his socials with all the swears. I hope Bronson Reed isn't just shuffled back into nothing after the win over Sami Zayn.
I would think at the very least is Bronson's going to get a match against Sami Zayn in the aftermath of this. I would hope that was not just for no reason. That's done for a purpose. I'm just looking up right now when they are in Montreal because I'm curious when that show is. So they are in you know what? I may have been mistaken. I know that they're in Montreal. Anyway, why don't we go to the next piece of feedback here? I'll find this Montreal.
Okay, thing. We got a Nas from New York who says, the first 75 minutes of Raw was just so, so good. Absolutely outstanding. Most hype I've been for WrestleMania ever. Wow. All right, last one here comes to us from Annie who says, the build is in a great place for Raw. The cycle usually culminates in me getting excited after Raw and hating wrestling after SmackDown every week. Some of these character arcs have been well written and have overlapped smoothly. Nice follow-up for Becky and Rhea, and while Drew and Rollins have an interesting dynamic, this segment gave that match the spice it needed. The Sami story is the most intricate on the show. Was the use of blood on a white background in the closing angle inspired by the Bucks? The setup to it was masterful. Drew was talking to Heyman in the background. Solo and Jimmy showed up. Seth told Jay he feels something is off as Drew takes out Seth at ringside, resulting in Cody coming out and going after the bloodline, only to fall into the trap set by The Rock. Across the board, there are better, more substantive stories going into this card than 39, in my opinion. The only thing 39 had over it was the unique Ray Dom soap opera.
Raw is in Montreal the week after WrestleMania, April 15th at the Bell Center. So, I mean, if you're putting the title on Zayn, a Zayn Bronson Reed match in Montreal, that would be my first title defense for Sami Zayn.
coming off of tonight. I think that would be the place to do it. Well, there you go.
Yeah. No, I just agree with Ani that this has been a better build, maybe encompassing more stories. I mean, I would say Cody and Roman was pretty well built.
As was the tag title program last year.
True. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you had some good stuff going in last year as well on top of it. Okay. Well, there you have it, everyone. The penultimate Rewind to Raw before WrestleMania, but a lot coming up Tuesday at noon Eastern. It is going to be the Wellness Policy as Jordan, Neil, and Wei are chatting about video games. So look out for that. Up next is coming your way on Tuesday night. And then Wednesday, Pollock and Thurston at 3 Eastern. We're going to have a pair of guests joining us. And then Rewind to Dynamite dropping on Wednesday night after the show from Quebec City. So there you have it. Some AEW and WWE hitting Quebec in short fashion.
Yep. And just wanted to say we're approaching the month of April, so we thank all of you guys who are patrons over at postwrestlingcafe.com. We'll be doing a lot of extra WrestleMania week coverage here at starting on April 1st, actually. So if you're a patron, please consider staying on and support the site. If you're not, this is a great time to jump on.
postwrestlingcafe.com. You'll more than get your money's worth during our trip down to Philadelphia, where we're going to be putting up a ton of shows and extra audio up on the cafe throughout our travels to Philadelphia and various shows we're seeing, and kind of a day-to-day guide on top of things. So check out all of that. And yes, we've got talk coming up on Thursday on the cafe as well. So that is it for us. Good night from John Pollock and Wei Ting.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.